Hey everyone, welcome back. We're diving into 2 Samuel today. It's this really fascinating continuation of King David's story.
Yeah, you know, it really is.
And I'm really excited to get into it with you because, you've been spending some time with this book, and I know you've got a lot of really great insights. And plus, 2 Samuel, it's got it all. I mean, you've got these moral dilemmas, political intrigue, even like historical inconsistencies, a little bit of a clash with modern science, even in there. So let's just jump right into it, shall
For
we?
sure.
So 2 Samuel picks up right where 1 Samuel left off, right? King Saul is dead. And you'd think, okay, David's finally king. This is what he's been waiting for. He's going to be celebrating.
Yeah, you would think, right?
But the text tells us something completely different. It says he's mourning Saul's death.
Yeah, it's kind of a curveball right at the beginning because you expect him to be, like you said, throwing a party. This is his big moment, but he's genuinely sad.
So how do you interpret that? What do you think the author is trying to show us here?
Well, I think it shows a couple of things. I mean, on one hand, it shows that David, he's not just this power hungry, schemer. He's got depth, he can feel genuine sadness even for our arrival. But on the other hand, you can't ignore the political implications here,
Oh,
right?
for sure.
I mean, showing grief for the fallen king, that's a pretty smart move politically. It shows respect, it unifies the people, so maybe there's a little bit of both going on.
Yeah, it's like he's a brilliant strategist and a complicated guy, all in one.
Definitely. And that kind of sets the tone for the whole book, I think.
I mean, because speaking of complicated, we got to talk about the whole David and Bathsheba situation.
Yeah, we can't avoid that one.
Yeah, this is like a pivotal story in 2 Samuel. I mean, for those who aren't familiar, David, he sees Bathsheba bathing, and he's overcome with this desire for her, and he basically ends up committing adultery with her. And then, of course, to make matters worse, she gets pregnant.
Right. And it's not just the adultery, it's how he tries to cover it up. I mean, talk about a moral free fall. He basically sends Bathsheba's husband, Uriah, he's a soldier, to the front lines.
Pretty much a guaranteed death sentence.
Exactly. It's brutal. And it really forces you to confront this question. How can this be the same David, the shepherd boy, the giant slayer, the man after God's own heart?
I mean, that's the big question that hangs over this whole story, right?
Right.
Like, how do you reconcile, I mean, how do you reconcile this terrible act with the image of David as this righteous king?
Yeah. I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I mean, it really makes you grapple with some pretty profound questions about human nature, about sin and redemption, and even about God's role in all of this.
And of course, you can't forget of the consequences.
Oh,
I mean, Nathan, the prophet, he confronts David, and then David's child, the child that was born from this whole affair, he dies.
Yeah, that's the part that always gets to me, this idea of divine justice. It's a tough one to wrap your head around, because on one hand, you can say that David's actions had consequences, that he was held accountable. But then on the other hand, a child dies. And, it makes you wonder, is that really just?
You mentioned something earlier that I wanted to circle back to. You talked about 2 Samuel as this kind of window into the world of ancient Israel. It's not just a religious text, it's like a history book too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you get this really vivid picture of politics and power struggles and all the drama that comes with being king. I mean, you've got David consolidating his power, dealing with rebellions, even like family feuds. It's like a soap opera sometimes.
Yeah, a very, very old soap opera.
Exactly. But, it helps us understand the challenges of leadership in that time, the strategies that kings use to maintain control. It's really fascinating.
It's like Game of Thrones, but in the ancient world.
Yeah, there you go.
But speaking of history, there are also these little historical inconsistencies that we find in 2 Samuel, right?
Yeah, and those are always interesting to unpack.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. One that always comes to mind is the different accounts of Saul's death.
Oh, right.
So in 1 Samuel, he falls on his own sword. But then in 2 Samuel, you have this Amalekite who comes along and claims to have killed him. So it kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. Like, which one is it?
Why do you think these differences exist?
Well, there are a few possibilities. Maybe it's just a matter of different sources, different perspectives on the same event. Or maybe there's some political spin going on.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe one version is trying to protect David's image while another one is trying to make Saul look bad.
That's a good point.
So, you know, it reminds us that we have to be careful when reading these ancient texts. We can't just take everything at face value.
Yeah. We have to kind of read between the lines a little bit. Now,
Exactly.
there's also this element in Toti Samuel that kind of clashes with modern science, right? Like, for instance, there's this story about one of David's warriors who kills a giant. And this giant is actually described as the brother of Goliath.
Yeah, that's one of those passages that really makes you think about how to interpret these stories. I mean, on the surface, it seems like a pretty straightforward account of, you know, a superhuman feat. But when you start to think about the logistics of it all, the sheer size of this giant, it kind of strains credulity, you know? So it forces us to consider other possibilities. Maybe it's a form of literary exaggeration, you know, a way of emphasizing the warrior's strength and courage. Or maybe it's meant to be symbolic, you know, the giant representing some kind of obstacle or enemy that David and his men had to overcome. So, you know, it's a reminder that these ancient texts, they often blend history and myth and metaphor to convey deeper truths.
So with all these complexities, how should we approach a book like 2 Samuel?
Well, I think the most important thing is to approach it with an open mind. You know, not just looking for simple answers or trying to force it into a preconceived box. We need to be willing to wrestle with the tough questions that it raises. You know, the questions about morality and leadership and even about faith and how we interpret these ancient texts.
Yeah, it's a book that's full of challenges, but also I think full of rewards.
Definitely. I mean, it's a book that's been read and studied and debated for centuries, and it still has the power to speak to us today, to make us think about our own lives, our own beliefs, and the way we see the world.
And to leave you with one final thought, I mean, we see that David, this hero of the Bible, he's flawed, he makes mistakes, some of them really, really big mistakes. So how does that, I guess, how does that change the way we think about righteousness? I mean, does it make the whole concept of being a good person a lot more complicated?
That's a great question, and honestly, I don't have a simple answer for you. I think that's something that each of us has to wrestle with on our own.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to dive into these texts with you. And for all of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.